5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Godfather of Houston Sports Radio, the preeminent NFL draft analyst, you found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Astros opening up game one at Minute Maid Park tonight. Now, it's kind of silly that they go on their longest road trip, 11-day road trip of the year to start the season. It wasn't supposed to be that way. It just wasn't supposed to be that way. It was supposed to be that they started with the Phillies and the Yankees to start the season at home. But instead, we've got this. We've got the Angels coming in here. And did you see Trout get hit in the hand? You see that?
I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that looked bad.
Bad luck for him, man. He's had some bad luck.
Yeah, he really has. There was a big – I mean, Manny Fresh is a big Trout hater, and there was a big conversation about – because you brought it up first, RJ. Mike Trout, it's his – I don't know what home run it was, 300-some home run, 382, whatever the number was. He's played in three playoff games in his entire career, won none. He's never won a playoff game. So, I mean, how can you be one of the great players of your time, your era? Manny went a little far with it. I mean, I think he said that Tim Bogar was a better hitter. The level of disrespect that Manny had for Mike Trout is a great, great, great player. When the list of the top the top 100 players of all time came out, Trout ended up 15th, which I thought, that's kind of odd. I would have thought Mike Trout would be considered greater, but, you know, this last lack of postseason thing, and, you know, he's become injury prone. In a lot of cases, like yesterday, it's not his fault. I mean, he gets hit in the hand by a pitch. It gets away from a guy, and you know what? Now we'll see how long it takes him to get back out there. He's been on crappy teams because that's an organizational thing. They've made huge mistakes in signing big-name players to crappy contracts, never getting the pitching that they've had to have. Not drafting well. Their organization, they haven't developed players. The Angels are a big, I mean, their payroll has been large, and they've done literally nothing since 2002. I mean, it's just been they've been bad. It's just been a bad organization, and he's been stuck in the middle of it. Now he is getting paid. I'm not worried about Mike Trout. He's getting paid handsomely, isn't he? But they come to town tonight now. And coming off of losing 3 out of 4, and Joe Maddon says, you know what, we're right there. We're right there with the Astros. We're one, you know, we're a good team, and we're going to fight for the – nah, that's really not the case, Joe. I mean, you're coming in, they're 6-4. The Astros are 5-4. But you're not the Astros, bro. You're not even close to the Astros. Your team is not – you've got some hitters, and you've got some potential. I like Walsh at first base. He's a nice player. Of course, Ohtani is one of the best players in the game. Trout.
Tell me how scared you are of the Angels now. Here we go.
No, I'm not scared of the Angels. I've never been scared of the Angels. Oh, that pitching staff, are you kidding me?
Is Justin Verlander pitching yet? Is he pitching today?
No, they're facing murderer's row here. You got Luis Garcia, you got Framber Valdez, and then you got Jake Odorizzi in this three-game series.
Oh, can they skip Jake yet?
Listen, I'm going to tell you this. And I'll tell you, I'm a little bit worried. because of how many days off they've had in this five-man rotation, in a lot of instances to start a season, you're only going to go with a four-man rotation because so the guys will get on their schedule. Now, they had a, you had an abbreviated preseason, right? You had a, an abbreviated spring schedule, which was okay. You had to get ready. So you're being ultra-conservative. You let Verlander throw 87 pitches, which is the most that you let anybody throw. Verlander probably told Dusty, oh, come get me in the seventh inning of see how this works out for you if I've thrown 80 pitches and you're coming to get me. Guess what's going to happen? You're going to get the what for. You're going to catch a fresh one, Dusty. So you're not doing that to Justin Verlander, even though you were able to do that to Clayton Kershaw. But I'm going to tell you this. I wouldn't be surprised if Urquidy doesn't say, you know, it's hard to get Fromber, well, all the walks that he had the other day. They've had a lot of time off in between starts. It's a lot more than they're used to. And now we're talking about after this game on Wednesday with Los Angeles, we've got Toronto coming in here, and that starts 33 games in 34 days. And the thought is you move Christian Javier into the rotation now. So you're going to have 5 days off in between every start for every starter. There comes a point. Guys used to throw every fourth day. There used to be 3 days off, and then you throw. There might come. This might be something that's really not good for this rotation, is that you're getting 5 days off in between starts because you just might not have command.
Maybe so. I think it will depend on the pitcher. I think we're – I mean, these aren't babies. These guys are pros. I worry more about things like I'm worried tonight, and I'll tell you why. The reason I'm worried a little bit about tonight, for at least for the hitters, is that that is anybody who's ever been to Seattle or traveled from Seattle knows that Seattle to anywhere is the worst flight ever because it's always the longest flight ever. So you had a getaway game yesterday in the middle of the afternoon in Seattle. You had to get in tonight, and then you have another. You know, from a travel standpoint, it's just not optimal. So you're playing again tonight. You do have the home opener. The fans will be there. They'll be excited. But it's the getaway game from Seattle to Houston is like I said, it's not the optimal place to come from just because it can. I know they're not flying United or flying Delta, which I think is the hub there. I get that.
They got comfortable. I mean, it's a 4.5 hour flight. You know,
yeah.
It's longer than
it's a little bit of a sucky travel from a getaway game. No, they didn't because they did have the afternoon game. I mean, you're not going to do that. But, you know, Verlander was so brilliant. I want to hear from Justin Verlander right now. Verlander, the other day, you know, John, I was worried about, okay, how many innings do they pitch? The guy hasn't pitched. We always talk about rust for pitchers. Well, this guy hasn't really pitched in 2 years. How is Justin Verlander, A, how's he going to start the season? And B, you know, what's his recovery going to look like? Are they going to have him on an innings, you know, a pitch count, an innings count? What is it going to look like? Verlander was premium Justin Verlander. Gave up 3 hits in 8 innings, struck out 10, had no walks. And Justin Verlander talked about, after the game, he talked about his performance.
I think most of the day my fastball control was pretty good. Curveball was excellent. And the slider was kind of hit or miss. But made some good pitches when I had to with it.
To pitch this deep into a game and just be this dominant, it's been a while since you did that. Just to get that feeling again, just and all the hard work you put in, just how gratifying is that just to know that, man, I can still do this at a very, very high level?
I mean, I wouldn't have put in all the hard work if I didn't think I could still pitch at a high level. But that being said, it is definitely gratifying. To have that feeling again of going out there after a tough loss yesterday and being able to pick us up and go deep in the game and do what really I expect to do most times out. Obviously it doesn't always work out that way, but put high expectations on myself and was able to reach those today. And I guess it just makes it a little bit sweeter because of all of that work that you talked about. I'm enjoying this one a little bit.
One of the things I want to point out is that what made me most excited, John, is that that's your number one. Fromber is not your number one, but you want him to be because you know eventually Verlander's not going to be here. But just knowing that Justin Verlander still exists, that Justin Verlander is still inside that body, that was such a huge,
huge win.
That's
exactly what
me.
I'm talking about. Odorizzi gives you a stinker the night before, and you come back with your stopper. Now, it was a little troublesome watching Urquidy yesterday. He's a guy who didn't. He didn't throw a lot of strikes. Frommer didn't throw a lot of strikes. You know, these guys with a lot of time off are not. And now you lose Presley. That's a big loss. Nerys was in there yesterday for Verlander, and he closed that thing out. It was a 4-0 game, no save. But now you're out without Presley as well. This bullpen has got to pick up these guys. And I'm just saying, you're starting a season where you are, you know, they're getting a lot of time off, and they're not throwing a lot of pitches. And it seems like a lot of guys don't have their command. We're going to have to keep an eye on that. All right, when we come back, we're going to have Ryan Wilson join us here to talk about the NFL. Ryan Wilson covers the NFL for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He also is a regular on the Pick 6 contest, so we'll do that. Right now, though, we're talking about Chastang Ford. Those are my people over at Chastang Ford. I love the people at Chastang Ford. You're going to love doing business with – and it all starts at the top, people. You know, your direction of an organization, it can be all really bad at the top. It can be great at the top. And that's the kind of organization that you have, and that's the kind of – and it's a trickle-down effect. And when Patrick Chastang, it's so funny. I mean, one of the first things that he told me when I walked in the door, he said, I want you to make sure that you tell everybody there's no add-ons around here. We are not trying to upsell anything. That's not the way we do business here. And he was serious about it. And when I bought my car there, he was like, what do you want in your vehicle? And the thing about mine was I bought the Expedition with the package, and I don't need a sun. I don't like the sun. I never used a sunroof. But you know what? It was in the package, and that was what I wanted. I wanted that package. I wanted the rest of the stuff in there. But right now, you customize it exactly how you want it. You don't have to take anything that the dealership that Detroit sent them. You don't have to do that anymore because you can customize the vehicle perfectly for you. So there is no – and trust me, they didn't say, oh, you got to have this one with the sun. I said, I want that package. Oh, it comes with a sunroof. Okay, that's fine. But you, my friends, now you get to customize everything, and you're not paying – you're not paying MSRP when you order this vehicle from Chastang Ford. You're getting the best. You're getting the best in service. You're getting it from people that you're just going to love doing business with, and they're going to get you all the rebates they possibly can. So if you're looking for the best way to get that Ford car or truck, there's one place to go, Chastang Ford. It's at ChastangFord.com, or it's on 610 at Homestead, not Hempstead, just 5 minutes from downtown. Tell them you heard it right here on ESPN 97.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks!
You are listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, welcome back. I'm at Hermit Park for the big Lucille's 1913 golf tournament. Lance is in Boston for the Boston Marathon. Ryan Wilson is joining us from CBS Sports, covers the NFL and NFL draft for CBSSports.com and CBS Sports HQ, and is a regular on the Pick 6 podcast. Ryan, welcome in. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. How's it going?
Doing great. Hey, I'm seeing smoke now. Am I not? There's the reports. Hey, are the Lions going to take Malik Willis with the number 2 pick? This is smoke season, right? Is there any way? Are the Lions going to use the number 2 pick on a quarterback, or are they trying to lure some people up to that number 2 spot to make a trade out?
No, it feels like a smokescreen. I mean, you mentioned the number 2 pick. They have 32. They pick early in the second round. And I think if we're being honest with ourselves, these quarterbacks are legitimately second-round guys for the most part. Now, teams will try to talk themselves into some of these players, and it happens every year. But I think this class, compared to the last 3 or 4 or 5 classes in quarterbacks, it just isn't great. And if you're Dan Campbell and you make some strides last year, and if you have all these picks to work with, and you feel good-ish, if you want to call it that, about Jared Goff, and I think he surpassed expectations last year, it almost feels foolish taking a quarterback second overall. I think perhaps you're maybe trying to talk some teams into coming up. I don't know if anyone would come up for a quarterback, but they come for something else. If not, I think you stay put and you take the best of what's left over, whether it's Aiden Hutchinson or Trevon Walker or even Kayvon Thibodeau, if that's sort of your guy.
All right, let's say the Jags take Walker because that's out there. Or they take Icky or whatever they do. Aiden Hutchinson goes second to the Lions. Is there anybody we're worried about this number three pick. We talked about whether or not they should trade down. Is there anybody that would be coveted enough to come up that could give the Texans something that they would that they wouldn't mind trading out of that number three pick?
Would the Texans want to trade up to two or trade out at three?
Trade back and get more picks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, they're 13 as well, so they're gonna get two really good players if they stay put. But in a situation where Nick Caserio and Lovie Smith feels like they can move down, I don't know how many spots they're considering. I mean, would the Panthers want to move it from six to three to get an offensive lineman? That could be a consideration. Do the Texans need offensive line help? Yeah, but the Texans need help everywhere, and it may be a situation where they want to stockpile some picks, even if it's just getting back lower into the top 10 and then have whatever 9 or 10 and 13. I think you're in much better shape if you pick up an extra third or second or whatever the math ends up being, just for moving down that distance. I don't know if there's anyone number three that you absolutely have to take if you're Houston. Again, I don't know what they're talking about in their draft room. I don't know if they absolutely love Ike Ekwonu or Evan Neal. Or Charles Cross or one of the edge rushers. But I would certainly consider seriously moving down inside the top 10, maybe inside the top 12 if the Vikings want to move up for a defensive back or something, and then going forward with all those draft picks that you have going forward.
I think the Texans are a tough call at three. They're getting to be a tough call because there's rumors that they may not want to draft a player that they project as a guard, which might be Ike Ekwonu. Because drafting a guard third is just really considered highly unusual. Evan Neal, to me, Evan Neal is better than Titus Howard. I don't even think twice about it. I'd plug him in at right tackle if you want to and roll from there. And same thing with Ike Ekwonu. I wouldn't think twice, but there is a thought that the Texans might avoid that. I'm not sure that the Texans are going to be in on Kayvon Thibodeau or a guy like Jermaine Johnson. So if you take those two guys off the board, and I think the football standpoint, those should be guys in place, but there may be some personality stuff that they're not crazy about. So now three becomes a little trickier because they do want cornerback, but that's not a thing that Lovie typically covets early in the draft. I think that the Texans are getting to be a little bit difficult to figure out right now because I know they want pass rusher, but you know, if you're eliminating guys off your board for personality conflicts, now it's getting to be a little bit tougher at 3 and 13 to find what you want in cornerback, offensive line, and pass rush. So I think, you know, I kind of feel like the Texans are going to move off of one of those picks. I think 13 is more likely that they move back. The question I have for you though, Ryan, is knowing what you know about this draft, how valuable are these trade-out positions going to be when you don't have a draft that is high in terms of, you know, the way people perceive it?
Yeah, that's the thing. So this isn't a situation where you're trading up for a quarterback that you absolutely love, whether it's Justin Fields or even Patrick Mahomes a few years ago, because there aren't no quarterbacks. So that feels like it's going to deflate the value of the ability to trade down, and maybe it'll make teams less likely to trade out of spots if they're not getting the value that they think they would have gotten in previous years. Or maybe they understand that going in, teams are having conversations, they'll start having conversations, haven't already, about possible trade-down scenarios. So I don't imagine some of these will come in as a surprise on draft night, but I don't think you're going to get the value you would have gotten if you were the Browns a few years ago moving down. I think there's a team that traded with the Chiefs or the Texans, one of those teams, for them to get that quarterback. Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes a few years ago, because it's just not there. So now what can you get to allow a team to trade up for Sauce Gardner if that's what happens? Or if teams fall in love with Kyle Hamilton at 8 or 9 or 10, he's still there, what is the price you're going to get for a team trading up if they come up from the 20s or something? I think it's not going to be quite what it was in recent years, only because we understand that the quarterback class is depressed. And I don't mean that in the terms of being depressing. It's just not as good as it was in recent years, and you have to factor that in when you go through all this stuff.
Ryan Wilson with us here, CBS Sports, ESPN 97. Rank these positions for me, 1, 2, 3. Defensive cornerback.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you give me a couple positions. I can rank the positions.
Okay. I want cornerback, I want edge rusher, and I want offensive tackle.
Yeah, give us grades, too, if you want to make it A, B, C, D like that also.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll start with quarterback. So Sauce is my number one. I think I like Derek Stingley. This isn't news. We just have to sort of dismiss what happened in 2021 because he only played three games and didn't play particularly well and got hurt. I envision the 2019 version of him, and hopefully that's the one that shows up. And I think Trent McDuffie is right behind him. I like him a lot as well. I like Roger McCreary a lot, too. He just doesn't have the measurables. I think he's sort of a second-round guy you take and feel really good about because of the way he played consistently at Auburn against those SEC receivers. In terms of edge rushers, for me, it's Aiden Hutchinson. I'm trying to talk myself into Trevon Walker. I like him. I don't love him, and I think I get why teams love him, and I get why some folks in the draft media love him. I just didn't see it consistently, and I understand that we're talking about traits here. I'm nervous about taking a guy like that, one or two or three. He feels more comfortable for me of 15 or later, but I get it, and it jumps off at me. I like him a lot. The other edge rusher, I like Kayvon Thibodeau on the field. I've heard so many things off the field from teams, and I had a scout tell me last week, he said, I've heard so much about Kayvon Thibodeau, I don't even believe 75% of it now, and that's sort of where I'm at. So I'm just going to focus on the on-the-field stuff. And then Jermaine Johnson after that. I think Jermaine Johnson is an example of a guy who made a ton of money for himself in the Senior Bowl. Felt sort of like Montez Sweat, his ascent before he had the heart issues right before the draft. I like Jermaine. I don't love him as a top 10 pick, and I wonder if we're overselling ourselves on him. But first-round guy all day long, and I give him credit for how he played at Florida State and what he did in the pre-draft process to make himself some more money. What was the other position you asked?
Offensive tackle.
Oh, okay, yeah. So Icky's my number one. I think he's a tackle all day long. I was actually texting the scout about this in the fall because I was watching him, and I heard sort of media conversations about him perhaps going to guard. And the text I got back was, he's a tackle all day long. He's going to be better than Christian Darrisaw. And I feel that feels pretty accurate to me still. He told us at the combine that he said, look, man, I need to work on my passes. I admit that. But the way the athleticism with which he played the position while pass blocking was pretty impressive, given that he didn't know fully what he was doing. So I appreciate the fact that he's going to get better. I like Evan Neal behind him. I wanted to see a little more from Evan Neal during the season. I didn't see it, but that's okay. That doesn't mean he's not going to be a good football player. And Charles Cross is after that for me. Nothing original there. I get sort of hung up on Trevor Penning. I love the edge with which he plays. But he did play in the FCS. I thought he played really well against Iowa State in their second game of the season, I think it was. I thought he was good at the Senior Bowl, not great. And that's a concern. I wouldn't take him top 15, I don't think. And Bernard Raymond out of Central Michigan, I like him a lot. I know he's older. I know he's raw. I know he's just moved to position. But the athleticism as a former tight end, as someone who hasn't played football very long, I love that as well about him. So those are my guys at those three positions.
There it is, Ryan Wilson right here, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Ryan, we really appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, guys.
All right, there's Ryan Thanks, Wilson. Ryan. When we come back, Lee Ellis is going to join us right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We'll talk about the NBA with the athletic writer. But, Lance, right now you got to talk about your peeps over at Great Plate.
Well, let's talk about that. That's the holding company that owns Jack's Grill, which you hear me talk a lot about, and also that own Union Kitchen. Let me talk about Union Kitchen for a second. There is nothing better than a great brunch. We went to a brunch here. I'm in Boston now. Went to a brunch. It was a really good brunch. I really enjoyed it. The thing with the Union Kitchen is that there's something for everyone. Of course, they've got a fantastic here, I'm pulling up the menu right now. They've got a fantastic special with mimosas. That's like a locally famous thing. But when it comes to your brunch, I want to make sure I get them on your list of brunch locations that you want to go visit. Because here's an example. Breakfast pizza with sausage gravy, Gouda cheese, bacon pieces, fried eggs. It looks unbelievable. I haven't had that one. I have had the avocado toast, which is a healthier option. I've also had Bananas Foster French Toast, which is a less healthy option, as is the Elvis Waffle, which is a waffle with peanut butter and Bananas Foster sauce, candied bacon, whipped cream. I mean, that's just phenomenal. They've got the lobster omelets, the Colorado omelets with the beef and applewood bacon that's for you. And if you were looking for the most delicious
chorizo breakfast tacos, you're going to find them right there at my friends over at the Union Kitchen. So make sure that you check out theunionkitchen.com, theunionkitchen.com. You can find all six locations here in the Houston area. Lunch, dinner, brunch, I promise you, it is a winning location, the Union Kitchen.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5. The conversation continues on The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back. Out here live at Herman Park for the Lucille's 1913 Golf Tournament. We are a big sponsor of it, and we appreciate them having us out here. Lance is in Boston. Lee Ellis is joining us from The Athletic, NBA co-host of the No Dunks podcast, and NBA writer. Lee, welcome to the show. How are you?
Fine, thanks, guys. Thanks very much for having me.
We appreciate you being here. All right, let's talk about the games this weekend. What's the deal with Memphis? Are you a little worried about them this series, or are they going to bounce back big?
Oh, I'm not too worried at the moment. I think game one, you know, things always are a little bit funky, especially for the Grizzlies, who came in this season as the number two seed, which is, you know, pretty high expectations, and they're a pretty inexperienced team. And sometimes that can just happen in that first game. They haven't played for a while, of course. They had a week layoff there. The Timberwolves had to play earlier in the week just to get into the playoffs. And I think they were just sort of riding that, confidence there. It wasn't a bad game by Memphis by any standards, but Karl Anthony Towns, I think it's really important to see that he stood up in that game and showed that there wasn't a great matchup for Memphis there. Steven Adams, who's a very physical, big guy, a little bit too slow, not too super athletic. And then Jaren Jackson, who's not a bad athletic guy, maybe not quite as big and strong as Steven Adams. And then you go deeper into the bench and you find a guy like Brandon Clark, who's a little bit undersized. So I think the Grizzlies just found a little bit trouble slowing him down. And, you know, it's just one of those games where Karl Anthony Towns was dominant and he took his team to victory. So I think you're going to see a Grizzlies bounce back. I think they're going to be much better in game two, and they're going to get a little bit more of a contribution from some of the guys, like Desmond Bane, who's been really important for them. He had a couple of moments there in the game, but otherwise didn't have a huge impact. And I think that's something that the Grizzlies need is those role players stepping up a little bit more. Ja Morant was good. I wouldn't say he was great. He got to the free throw line a lot. But again, this is a team that, you know, when you're the number two seed, you're expected to win your first round series very, very comfortably. And they just haven't had that expectation in the past. They just made the playoff last season, won a game against the Utah Jazz, and it was like, well, that was a good result. Well, now the expectations are a little bit higher, and the Grizzlies just didn't do a great job in the first game of handling that, but I expect them to be much better, a little bit more in control in game two.
Yeah, to me, this is the Suns' playoffs to win. I mean, I feel like they're on a mission. I feel like they're the most set from a roster standpoint, and I think they're the most in control of their own destiny. But when you look at the West, you know, I have a hard time. I don't believe in the Jazz because they always come up short in the playoffs. Without Luka, even for two games, you can write the Mavericks off. Not like I really consider them serious contenders. Who do you think? Is it just a two-team race, in your opinion, realistically, between the Golden State Warriors and the Phoenix Suns? Or do you anticipate a third team being in the mix?
No, I think for the most part it's going to come down to the Suns and the Warriors there. And I think for the reasons you mentioned, I think the Utah Jazz, I mean, look, honestly, a game one on the road without Luka Doncic was a must-win for the Jazz, and they almost blew it at the end there. If Maxi Kleber knocks down a three, you know, maybe the Mavs pull this one off. Now, Luka Doncic isn't playing game two either, so that's a huge advantage here for the Jazz. They have to take advantage. But I just don't believe in them either. They've blown playoff leads in consecutive seasons. They're not a good fourth-quarter team as far as executing. And there's some weird stuff going on between Gobert and Donovan Mitchell right now, which I think, you know, they might survive this first round against the Mavs, but I think that's going to sort of be a bit of a factor further into the playoffs they go. And as for the Suns and the Warriors, I think if the Warriors are as healthy as they can be, then they absolutely provide the biggest threat to Phoenix, because they've been there before. You know, I talked about the Grizzlies in the last block just there. You know, just Draymond and Steph and Clay, these guys have won, obviously, championships. They've been there. They know that home court doesn't mean all that much. Health is way more important. And we're just starting to see them try to find their feet a little bit here in the playoffs. I mean, Steph Curry came off the bench in game one. I'm not sure if that's going to happen in game two or not. but it proved to be the right move against the Denver Nuggets. And Draymond Green, I mean, he came back. He had a long layoff in the mid-season here, and he came back, and he wasn't looking himself. But playoff Draymond Green is a different story, and I think you're going to see, you know, he defended Nikola Jokic as well as anyone can in Game 1. I think he knows that's the biggest challenge for the Warriors, just getting past the Nuggets. But if he can find his form again and find his rhythm, then their defense is such a different factor for every other team to have to go up against, because that's where the Warriors know they can really slow teams down. So I think that's important. And then Klay Thompson, you know, he had a very good end to the season as far as shooting the ball, because he struggled in his return initially. But again, these sort of guys understand it's not about playing your best basketball right now. It's about surviving the first round, getting better in that second round, and then hopefully everyone's feeling better and got their juices flowing there for the conference finals if they face Phoenix Suns then. But yeah, I also think, though, that the Phoenix Suns have really responded well to what last season's disappointment ended up being. You know, two games up, you know, Game 3 is a very close one there against the Bucks in the finals, and they lose it, and then they lose in six from there. And you could just sort of see sometimes teams respond by saying, hey, we were close, and that was the best effort we got. Instead, the Suns came back so much better this season. You know, they're deeper, they're a better defensive team. DeAndre Ayton's taken a real leap. Devin Booker is going to get very close to winning MVP. I think he probably finishes third or fourth overall. But they've shown that last season was a learning season for them, rather than just a, like, you know what, that was a good season, and then we'll hit the restart button. Because they could have, with Chris Paul, they could have let him walk. Instead, the ownership invested with him, and you saw just last night, you know, against the resilient Pelicans team, Chris Paul steps up in that fourth quarter and leads the team home. So I'm pretty excited to see. I hope we do get a Suns and Warriors matchup, because I think it will be the best test of both of these teams, and I think the best teams of the West are out of those two.
Lee Ellis with us here, The Athletic, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Out of the East, it could be any one of five teams, right? Miami. And if the Nets win that series, or Boston wins that series, whatever, I mean, that doesn't get much more equal. And then there's the Sixers and the Bucks. I mean, how do you qualify the best in the East?
Yeah, it is a great battle there in the East. I don't think there is a clear favorite. You know, Miami had the best record in the East, very good home court, and you know, defensively, we just know that heat culture with Eric Spoelstra there and Pat Riley. They like to really lock in, and they did that in Game 1 against the Atlanta Hawks. Trae Young really struggled, 1-for-12 from the field. So you know that defensively Miami's got it. You just wonder if at times their offense doesn't quite have enough. Now, Duncan Robinson was great coming off the bench yesterday, but he's been struggling this season. And Jimmy Butler's an interesting one, because 2 years ago in the bubble, he was brilliant for the Heat. But then last season against the Bucks, he was really, really bad in the first round. I think he's more like he was in the bubble than he was last season. But at times, I just wonder if that offense for the Heat can keep up with their defense. Maybe it can, but when you're going up against potentially a guy like Giannis in the conference finals, I just think that Giannis's ability to really impact games on both ends of the floor and dominate, and you know, he's such a tough matchup, even against a guy like Bam Adebayo, I think the Bucks are still the favorite for me. I just think, having won last season, having overcome Kevin Durant in the second round there, and then coming back from two games down against the Phoenix Suns, it just showed how Giannis is just so locked in. I mean, he had a 50-point game 6 to win the championship. That's something that is truly historic in the NBA. So I like the Bucks. The Sixers, for me, had a very impressive first game against the Toronto Raptors. Tyrese Maxey was brilliant in that game. But when you look at the Sixers, and we know James Harden tends to play okay in the first couple of games of the series, then fades. We know Doc Rivers at times have trouble closing out series as the coach. So I think that then there's other guys, you know, like Tobias Harris, not a great playoff performer. But he's Thibault won't even be able to play in the games in Toronto for this season, for this series. So, you know, there's some factors here working against the Sixers. They probably survive against the Raptors in this first round, but I think their sort of limit there is probably the second round, because then they go up against the Heat in that second round, assuming Miami advances, which they likely will. So I think there's, you know, three or four teams, if things go right, maybe an injury for the other team can help. And Greg Popovich, the five-time NBA head coaching championship winner there, even he's talked about it, how sometimes you just need things to maybe fall your way, whether or not it's a lucky bounce like the Celtics got against the Nets yesterday, whether or not it's a guy being injured at the wrong time of the playoff, like we saw with James Harden and Kyrie Irving for the Nets last season. So things can tilt pretty quickly, even though on paper it looks like it's going in one direction. Things can change by just one or two minor things that go your way. And I think that could be what ultimately decides the Eastern Conference, because I think the Heat, the Bucks, and you know, the Sixers to some degree, but also certainly the Celtics, all have a very, very strong case to come out of the East. But of course, only one of them can. So it's going to be very interesting to see exactly how it gets decided the further into the playoffs we go.
It really is going to be fun, because you look at how the Sixers are comprised. And I brought this up earlier, Lee. If Maxey can be having his Siakam moment, where he all of a sudden in the postseason becomes who he's going to become, you know, he takes that next step like Siakam did 3 years back, that could be a very interesting turn if James Harden is willing to take on a more distributor-type role for Maxey and for everyone else, frankly, on the team, because he can still set people up. He's still great at that, and Embiid is still a dominant threat. But if Harden can take a little lesser role and somebody else can take that step up, that could be a really interesting dynamic that we haven't seen from the Sixers so far.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, they need someone else to be big, like we did get from Maxey in that game. And he's so quick, you know, he can attack the paint, he can hit those three-pointers. And I think if you're the Raptors, they probably weren't game planning for that sort of explosion from him. They were more focused on trying to keep Joel Embiid, you know, keep him under control as much as they can. Because in the season series, when Joel Embiid has been on the court, he's won all those minutes against the Raptors. But when he's been sitting, that's when the Raptors really take advantage of Philadelphia. So the Sixers needed someone else to come out there and be able to sort of keep the game in control without having Joel Embiid play 45, 46 minutes in the game. So that worked perfectly here in Game 1. How the Raptors adjust now is going to be interesting in Game 2, especially if they might be facing this Game 2 without Scottie Barnes, possibly without Gary Trent Jr. as well. So, and Thaddeus Young, he's also likely to miss this game. So the Raptors are going to be shorthanded, and they have to probably look at this and think, well, we did a good job on Embiid, but then this other guy beat us. Do we take our chances and see if Maxey can replicate that game in Game 2, or do we sort of try to now focus on slowing him down, which maybe opens up the court for Joel Embiid? I think if you're the Raptors, you say, let's see Maxey go for another 38, because that's less likely to happen than it is Joel Embiid sort of feasting inside, getting to the free throw line and getting some easy buckets. But a very, very good performance by the Sixers, because I think they are a team that is most likely to implode when things go wrong out of anyone basically in the playoffs right now. You know, we've just seen that in the past. Tobias Harris has sort of gotten into it there with the fans. We know the fans get on Doc Rivers, certainly after what happened against the Atlanta Hawks last season. So, you know, the fans don't have a lot of patience with Philadelphia, but certainly I think they're feeling a lot better after what they saw from Game 1, because it was a pretty dominant victory from start to finish. The Raptors never really got close to enough to challenge. And now, as I say, with some injury concerns going into Game 2, the Sixers have got to feel pretty confident they're going to be 2-0 up going back to Toronto.
That's Lee Ellis. He's got a funny accent, but he knows his NBA. Okay,
says the guy from Chicago.
Oh, really? You're in Boston. Lee, are you from Boston?
I'm not from Boston.
Since I've been in America, I don't have an accent. Everyone else does. It's crazy. I mean,
I want to ask you. So you're English, right?
No, Australian.
Australian.
Oh, wait a minute. Why am I missing the Australian? It's not as thick as it needs to be for an Australian. He's not right here. I just got done seeing Jim Jeffries. He doesn't sound like that. So, how'd you get
right
it? So, basketball. Well, hold on. I want to get a little bit more in here with Lee. How did you get into basketball? Obviously, Andrew Gaze dating all the way back into the late 80s with his team, trip in the Big East. When did you get into basketball? Just out of curiosity, because the Pro Football Focus guys, a bunch of them have come from Ireland, right? And that's in a big NFL business. And we are seeing sports in general become much, much, much more international from a media standpoint as well. How did you get into basketball? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, well, so I used to play basketball as a kid growing up in Australia, like everyone sort of did in our little town there. But we're always fascinated with the NBA in the 80s, but this was before cable TV and before the internet. So we could just only hear about Dr. J and Larry Bird and the new kid, Michael Jordan, but we couldn't really get access to it. And then one day, in 1987 it was, my older brother came home from school. A friend just got back from America, and he had the 87 All-Star game. Now, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that one or not, but that's the game where Rolando Blackman, you know, there's 3 seconds to go, the West are down by two. Rolando Blackman drives inside, gets four guys jumping on him, he gets fouled. No time.
Was it the Astrodome? The game was at the Astrodome in Houston.
It was in Seattle. It was in the King Dome.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, the Astrodome.
Maybe I'm thinking of a different
one. 89.
Okay, yeah, anyway, that's right. So, that's right.
Yeah. So Rolando Blackman steps up, knocks down these two free throws, and the West go on to win the All-Star game. And for me, right, so I was like 11 years old at the time, 12 years old. I was a big wrestling fan, right, WWE as it was back then. WWF, sorry, as it was back then. And so, you know, as a kid, you know Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage and Andre the Giant. And then I'm watching this basketball game, and there's like Sir Charles Barkley, you know, Magic Johnson, Dr. J, like all the guys seem to have these same characters. And I thought the game must have been fixed like that, but it couldn't have been, you know, it just couldn't have been. So that just created this fascination and love of NBA basketball. I did everything I could to learn about the NBA. I used to get Hoop magazine and Basketball Digest mailed in so I could read all about it. And then slowly in the late 80s, early 90s, we started getting more NBA basketball. And, you know, so for me, it was like, I feel like I was just like this kid as a student who, I didn't do very well in school, but ask me anything about the NBA when I was like 13 years old, and I just knew it if I read it in Hoop magazine. And so, you know, it just created this love and this passion, and now to do what I do is really incredible, because I wanted to do something like this, but I just could never see how it was going to happen when I was growing up a million miles away from the United States and from the NBA.
Lee Ellis is basically Australian me. Like, everything he just said was just my childhood, too. I didn't do particularly good in school. And, me too. I watched basketball, love that. Me too. That was my yeah. So is Andrew Gaze is that your Jordan? Is that Australian Jordan, Andrew Gaze?
Well, yeah, so Seton Hall in the 89 NCAA final, I mean, that was broadcast live into Australia because Seton Hall made such an incredible run. And they would have won the championship if not for a dodgy foul call right at the end there for Michigan. So, yeah, Andrew Gaze was incredible. Of course, he was one of the first Australians to play in the NBA. He had a cup of coffee there with the Washington Bullets. Luke Longley, of course, was a big part of the Chicago Bulls' second three.
Bogut.
And then Shane Heal. I don't know if you guys remember Shane Heal. You know, Shane Heal got into it with Charles Barkley in the warm-up game for the 96 Olympics, which was incredible. Mm-hmm. And since then, you know, like Andrew Bogut, obviously being the number one pick, was huge for Australia. Now, Kyrie Irving was born in Melbourne. He was a number one pick. And then Ben Simmons was also born in Melbourne. So we've had three number one picks in the last, 15 years from born in Melbourne, which is something I'm very, very proud of, because it's like, man, what an incredible achievement for Australian basketball. Obviously now, you know, Kyrie Irving's an American rather than an Australian. Ben Simmons is a dual citizen, I believe, although he's an Australian representative. And Andrew Bogut, you know, he won a championship there with the Warriors. So, you know, basketball was huge in Australia. And to see now so many guys, you know, Patty Mills and Joe Ingles and Dellavedova Dover when he was there as well, having an impact in the NBA is really, really special.
Well, Kyrie Irving, that explains it, why he thinks the earth is flat. He didn't go to school much either, apparently. So there's that. That is Lee Ellis. Lee, we really appreciate it, man. Thanks for joining us. It's great talking some basketball with you. Let's do it again.
Anytime, guys. Thanks very much for having me.
All right, there he is, Lee Ellis, right here, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We are way behind, so we're going to have to maybe combine a break here. All right, Jay, why don't you start, Lance, with a little insurance talk?
I mean, nothing is going to get you more hyped than insurance talk. I recognize that. Might I interest you in saving a ton of money? But is that something you might be interested in? Or might you be interested in saving some of the hard-earned money that you are making because you want to, you know, make sure that you have the ability to, to save money, to find money? It's hard to find money these days. It's really hard to find money. You can't work a second job, and yet things are getting more and more expensive across the board. Where are you going to make your cuts? What are you cutting? Well, how about you don't cut anything? How about you just get A-rated homeowners insurance, but you pay less by going through an A-rated group of aggregate A-rated insurance companies? And that's what my friends at TGS Insurance do for you. TGSinsurance.com is the website. You can read up on them. But they aggregate A-rated companies. And when you text the word money to 232323, they shop all of these based on your address, and within 15 seconds you get a firm quote back, and you can you can compare that to what you're paying right now and find out how much you're saving. I'm going to save $400 on this last time around, but that's because I shop it so frequently. The average savings is about $900, and for those of you who have stayed with the same company for years, there's a pretty good chance you're going to get into the thousands for your annual savings this year. Put more money back in your pocket without
getting rid of A-rated insurance. Get the best insurance at affordable, competitive prices with TGS Insurance. Text the word MONEY to
232323. Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.